And Radio Derb is on the air. Greetings, listeners, from your continuously genial host, John Derbyshire, with the first podcast of Fall 2021. September 22nd having marked the equinox. This week's Radio Derb is defrosted, I'm afraid, not fresh. As happened once before, back in September 2019, I am off the grid for a few days, away from my recording equipment. I have therefore pre-recorded this podcast and stored it in the vaults at vdare.com world headquarters, to be taken out and posted late Friday night, as usual. There is, of course, a loss of topicality. Still, it is instructive sometimes to pause from wrestling with current affairs to cast our eyes back over the past. That's what I shall be doing. In my September 2019 venture into this format, I limited myself to reposting Radio Derb segments from the years 2004 to 2012. Today I shall pick up where I left off, reposting seven segments from the years 2013 to 2019, one segment from each year. As before, I'll be cutting and pasting the sound clips right out of the original audio files, so sound quality might be somewhat variable. I'll do my best to even it out. Also, as before, I shall bracket each segment with a couple of quick pips, fore and aft, so you know when it's today's derb talking and when it's derb from the past. All these segments have a common theme, the theme that defines vdare.com. Immigration. Here we go. February 2013, a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on immigration. My title for this segment in the transcript was, Can't deport 11 million? How about just one? Outrage of the week, if not of the decade, was surely Wednesday's scene at the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing in Washington, D.C. The committee's holding hearings on immigration. At Wednesday's hearing, they heard from Chris Crane, head of the ICE Employees Union, that's ICE, I-C-E, the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency. Officer Crane had horror stories to tell. For example, the story of an ICE agent who was suspended for 3 days. Why? Because the agent had arrested an illegal alien with multiple convictions for driving without a license. The alien was actually trying to operate a vehicle in the agent's presence. For the agent, 3 days suspension. For the illegal alien, nada. He was allowed to drive away unlicensed. Bad enough, to be sure, but that was the least of the horrors on display in the committee room Wednesday. Sitting two chairs away from Officer Crane, and bringing these hearings up to the outrage of the week level, was Jose Antonio Vargas, a known illegal alien. Not merely known, in fact, Mr. Vargas is famous for being an illegal alien. It's his life's work. He was on the cover of Time magazine last June under the story title, We Are Americans. Mr. Vargas is actually a Filipino, 32 years old.
He was brought to the USA at age 12 by his grandfather, with the aid of a people smuggler and a fake Philippine passport that the grandfather had arranged. No steps were subsequently taken to regularise his status. At age 16, Vargas discovered that his passport and his papers were all forged and that his presence in the USA was illegal. Instead of going back to the Philippines or getting lawyered up to change his status, which can be done, although it's a lengthy and expensive process, Vargas just lied his way forward, breaking numerous more laws. For example, he acquired a fake Social Security card, which he used to get jobs over several years at a Subway restaurant, a YMCA, a tennis club, and other places. He also lied on his I-9 forms. That's the form that every employer must get filled out for every hire, testifying that the person being hired is eligible for lawful employment in the USA. Vargas ticked the box for citizen each time, thus committing multiple violations of Title 18 of the US Code, Chapter 47, Paragraph 1001, for each of which violations Vargas is liable under the code to a fine and a term of imprisonment up to 5 years. Vargas didn't merely violate federal law, he violated state law too. He was hired as a reporter by the Washington Post in 2004, but he needed a driver's license. At the time, he was living in California, which is strict about giving out driver's licenses. Asking around, Vargas found that Oregon was much less strict, so he inveigled various people to send letters to him at an Oregon address belonging to a friend. That got him an Oregon license. Later, he got a Washington State driver's license the same way, though he's never been a resident of either Oregon or Washington. So, here's this shameless criminal sitting two chairs away from a law enforcement officer. Why didn't Officer Crane arrest Mr. Vargas? Are you crazy? He'd have been drummed out of the service and lost his pension rights. These are the depths to which we have sunk. A serial lawbreaker is fawned over by our elected senators, while law enforcement officers are disciplined for doing what they swore an oath to do. And fawned is no exaggeration. Democrats on the committee loved Mr. Vargas. The committee chairman, Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont, slobbered that, quote, "In speaking on behalf of millions who cannot speak for themselves, you shed light on the human impact of our immigration system," end quote. Well, for sure there's some human impact here, including some that was not being illuminated by Mr. Vargas in the committee room on Wednesday. There is, for example, the forgotten man, the American citizen who might have had a shot at that nice plump job at the Washington Post if Mr. Vargas hadn't hustled his way to it first with a sheaf of fake documents. How's that for human impact, Senator? Leahy also referred to Vargas as a, quote, whistleblower, apparently missing the point of whistleblowing, which is a thing that law-abiding citizens do to attract attention to law-breaking. Since Mr. Vargas is the one breaking the law here, he's the opposite of a whistleblower. A whistle-sucker, possibly. Mr. Vargas commenced his testimony by asking the senators two questions. His first question was, quote, "What do you want to do with me?" His second question was, quote, "How do you define American? How do you define it?" I'll have a shot at answering those. To the first, what I want to do with Mr. Vargas is to prosecute and punish him for his numerous crimes of fraud and misrepresentation in violation of state and federal laws, with the sentences to run consecutively for preference, and then to deport him back to the Philippines. To the second question, I define an American to be a person who has acquired US citizenship under the laws and constitution of the United States. Glad to help out there, Mr. Vargas. If you have any other questions, just give me a call, care of Tacky's Magazine.
José Antonio Vargas has subsequently had a lucrative career with lots of prizes and awards. There are a couple of honorary doctorates in there. He's had an elementary school named after him, and he's BFFs with Mark Zuckerberg. His current net worth is $6 million. So far as I can determine, he is still an illegal alien. The year 2014, first week of July. Nancy Pelosi visited the southern border and delivered some classic Pelosi babble.
The people who write newspaper stories and politicians' speeches and TV newsreaders' scripts now all have the phrase humanitarian crisis set up as a one key macro. Pretty soon they'll start abbreviating it. After all, eight syllables is a lot to have to keep repeating. There used to be a governor of New York State who was so fond of the phrase brotherhood of man and fatherhood of God. His speechwriters just abbreviated it to bomb fog in his scripts. Nancy Pelosi's people could do the same thing with humanitarian crisis, chopping it down to hum cry, perhaps. Nancy was actually down at the border this week to see the hum cry for herself. After visiting a facility in the Rio Grande Valley, where hundreds of this recent wave of Central American invaders are being held, Mrs. Pelosi spoke to the press. Every American should watch that speech. It's only 5 minutes. You can see it on YouTube. Put Pelosi on the border into the search box. Some record of it should be put in a time capsule and buried so that historians of the future will be able to understand why the USA disappeared from the face of the earth in the mid-21st century. Pelosi's speech is, not to put too fine a point on it, 5 minutes of the most concentrated stupidity it has ever been my painful duty to watch. I can't find a version with good sound quality, so I'll just read out snippets from it. Quote, "This is a community with a border going through it." End quote. What, so the USA and Mexico are a single nation? And the border is some kind of mistake? How does that even make sense in context? The teenage gangbangers, oh, I beg your pardon, the undocumented minors that Pelosi was visiting come from Guatemala, Honduras and El Salvador, hundreds of miles to the south of where she's standing on the Texas-Mexico border. Is she talking about their borders with Mexico? Or what? Quote, "And this crisis that some call a crisis, we have to view as an opportunity," end quote. I used to have a boss who, any time you went to him and said, "Paul, we have a problem," used to wave his index finger backward and forward in front of your face and say, "Not a problem, John, an opportunity." Everybody hated that guy. Quote, This morning we had the privilege of meeting with Bishop Flores and other advocates for justice on this issue. End quote. Doesn't justice have something to do with the enforcement of laws and the punishment of those who willfully break laws? No? Forgive me then, I obviously need a new dictionary. Quote, what we just saw was so stunning. If you believe, as we do, that every child, every person has a spark of divinity in them and is therefore worthy of respect, what we saw in those rooms was a dazzling, sparkling array of God's children worthy of respect. End quote. Possibly so, Congress Lady, but are they worthy of US residents? Since I assume the phrase every person includes me, then I must have that spark of divinity in me too. I'm glad to know it, but it still took me a lot of time, money and paperwork to satisfy the immigration authorities that I was worthy of residence in the USA. Are these little sparkles from Central America being held to the same standard? If not, why not? What else are they worthy of beside US residence? Olympic medals? Nobel Prizes? Taxpayer-funded housing, education and health care? Quote, so we have to use, as was said this morning, the crisis that some view as a crisis, and that does have crisis qualities, as an opportunity to show who we are as Americans. End quote. Of all the weasel phrases in current political discourse, that one about who we are as Americans is surely the most grating. Listeners, when you hear a politician utter the phrase, who we are as Americans, take a good tight grip on your wallet and get the hell out of there. Who we are as Americans, Congress Bimbo, is we are a sovereign nation ruled by laws which we like to see fairly and humanely enforced, if that's not too much trouble. Quote, so, with the balance that we're trying to create is to move these kids, these young people, these families, as quickly as possible into another setting. End quote. Hey, now you're on my wavelength, ma'am. Yes, let's get them into another setting, the one they came from. Quote, I'm a mother of five. I have 9 grandchildren. I wish that I could take all those children home with me. End quote. As numerous commentators have pointed out, Mrs. Pelosi, you can take them home with you. It's hardly likely that any official from the Obama administration would try to stop you. And you have plenty of room in the many spacious mansions and estates that you and your billionaire husband own. That 5-minute clip is, as I said, a little crystalline concentrate of the political stupidity that is dragging our nation down to perdition. To show you what I mean, let's just follow that path down a little way to see where it leads and what the future has in store for the USA.
August 2015. Honest, factual good sense on immigration isn't hard to come by. There have been well-researched, well-written books aplenty since the boss here, Peter Brimelow, published Alien Nation back in 1995. 2 decades on from that, in mid-2015, Ann Coulter joined the lists with a brilliant book titled Adios America. I enthused about that book in my August 21st podcast, right after a segment praising Donald Trump's excellent position paper on immigration. Remember that position paper?
If patriotic immigration reform has a hero in Donald Trump, it also has a heroine. That would, of course, be Ann Coulter. Ann's book, Adios America, has been soaring through the bestseller lists. It debuted June 21st at number 2 on the New York Times hardback nonfiction list. 8 weeks later, it's still at number 16. That's a simply wonderful showing for a book that lays out in detail, with full supporting references, all the stupidity and dishonesty of our immigration system, displaying it all to public view. To take one small example at random, from 100 that I could have taken, you know how politicians come up on your TV screen, look you straight in the eye, and tell you that they support amnesty for illegal aliens, but only if the alien pays a fine, pays back taxes, and learns English? Well, that's all bogus. As soon as Congress passes amnesty, all those conditions will be dropped. How do we know this? Because we already had one amnesty. IRCA, I-R-C-A. That's the Immigration Reform and Control Act of 1986. IRCA had those fees, those fines, those requirements to pay back taxes. And yes, a requirement that the alien, and here I quote from the actual text of the IRCA law, Title 2, Section B, Subsection 1, Item uppercase D, Paragraph lowercase Roman 1, quote, uppercase Roman 1, meets the requirements of Section 312 relating to minimal understanding of ordinary English and a knowledge and understanding of the history and government of the United States, or uppercase Roman 2, is satisfactorily pursuing a course of study recognized by the Attorney General to achieve such an understanding of English and such a knowledge and understanding of the history and government of the United States, end quote. What happened to those requirements? Let Anne tell us. Adios America, page 44, quote, the last amnesty was loaded up with fines, fees, back taxes, and English lessons for illegal aliens. Let's review how that panned out. English language requirement dropped by the INS. Fines dropped by the INS. Fees waived by the INS. Back taxes dropped by the IRS. End quote. That politician promising you those conditions and requirements for amnesty is lying, lying, lying. The conditions and the requirements will all be waived as soon as the amnesty program goes into effect, just as happened with IRCA 30 years ago. They are bogus, bogus, bogus. I urge you to read Anne's book if you haven't already done so. For those of us who've been toiling for years in these vineyards, it's wonderful to see the topic getting front page exposure at last. I can claim to be a 15-year veteran of patriotic immigration reform. That's how long ago I published my first article at vdare.com. Peter Bremelow was pruning the vines 8 years before that with his groundbreaking cover article, Time to Rethink Immigration, in the issue of National Review, dated June 22nd, 1992. Nothing in Anne's book is new to us. Indeed, we flatter ourselves that she got some of her facts from reading us, along with other sites exposing the current sham, sites like Center for Immigration Studies and
Numbers USA. Immigration has been a niche interest, though, and those of us trying to bring it to the political front burner have been working, how shall I put it, in the shadows, as respectable opinion has for decades deemed any criticism of immigration policy to be motivated by malice and cruelty. Now the ice is breaking at last. A lot of the credit for that goes to Ann Coulter. Thank you, ma'am.
By September 2016, the sands were running out on Barack Obama's presidency, but he still found time to throw some money, your money and my money, of course, at the refugee racketeers.
There is no aspect of the Western world's immigration romanticism more obnoxious than these refugee rackets. Not the least thing to find obnoxious about them is that there are genuine refugees. Helpless women, children and old people, driven from their homes by war and revolution, badly in need of food and shelter. The word refugee is not a synonym for immigrant, though. An immigrant is a person granted permanent residence in a country not his own, with the assurance and expectation that A, he will make a positive contribution to his new nation, and B, he will not be a danger to its native inhabitants, or a charge on the public purse. A refugee, on the other hand, is a person given charity in some safe place until he can safely return to his home. If, in the event he never can safely return to his home, he might reasonably be considered for immigration at some future time. That sure isn't how the USA conducts its refugee policy. I refer listeners to the website Refugee Resettlement Watch, run by the doughty Ann Corcoran, a true patriot and heroine of our time. Ann tirelessly chronicles all the crookedness and bogosity of our refugee system and its dire effects on American towns and cities and on our country's security. It's all a monstrous racket. Just to take that security aspect, a moment's common sense reflection tells you that chaotic places like Afghanistan, Sudan, Eritrea, and the Congo, with high levels of illiteracy and government clerks who can be bought over the counter for a pack of cigarettes, do not maintain reliable databases of criminal activity or terrorist affiliation. Anyone from any of those places can claim anything, and probably back up their claim with bogus documentation. If common sense doesn't tell you this, let the director of the FBI tell you. Giving testimony to the Senate Homeland Security Committee last year, Director Comey said, in respect of Syrian refugees, that, quote, "We can only query against that which we have collected. And so, if someone has never made a ripple in the pond in Syria in a way that would get their identity or their interest reflected in our database, we can query our database until the cows come home, but there will be nothing to show up because we have no record of them." End quote. That, of course, is no deterrent to the contractors running the refugee resettlement rackets, who have money and careers invested in the game. Still less does it deter our president, who has strongly pro-Muslim sentiments and a gnawing dislike of provincial white prole Americans, bitterly clinging to their Bibles and their guns. September 30th marks the end of the federal government's fiscal year 2016. So, although Obama won't be in charge much longer, he can ask Congress to appropriate money for fiscal year 2017. Well, he just asked. Specifically, he asked Congress to fund 110,000 so-called Syrian, so-called refugees for the coming fiscal year. The number for 2016 was 85,000, so that's an increase of 25,000. And as Anne Corcoran has documented very extensively, that 25,000 will be housed in red states, not blue states. Or as we Charles Murray fans would say, in white Prole Fishtown, not in upper middle class Belmont. The philanthropy of our elites is telescopic. They want to do good to the oppressed masses of the world, but they don't want them living nearby. They definitely don't want their kids going to school with them. From Obama's point of view, of course, it's win-win. In fact, it's win-win-win. Not only does he A, get a worshipful, admiring press from the globalist bureaucrats at the UN and elsewhere. Not only does he B, accelerate the growth of non-traditional America by importing a mass of fecund Muslims into states that voted against him. He also C, pokes a finger in the eye of those flyover white people he hates so much. Win, win, win! The American nation is not without its defenders, though. While Anne Corcoran is toiling away in the vineyards of internet commentary, Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama is striking back from Congress, where the money will be appropriated, if it gets appropriated. In a statement issued Tuesday this week, Senator Sessions blasted Obama's request. Sample quotes. Despite opposition by the American people, a documented link between terrorism and individuals admitted to the United States as refugees, and over $19 trillion in debt, the Obama administration has committed the United States to admitting 110,000 refugees during fiscal year 2017. The common sense concerns of the American people are simply ignored as the administration expands its reckless and extreme policies. The administration's claim that the program costs roughly $1.5 billion drastically understates the true costs of initial resettlement, as it does not include costs for programs such as temporary assistance for needy families, Medicaid or supplemental security income, among others. It would be safer and more cost-effective to establish safe zones for refugees as close to their homes as possible, particularly for those from the Middle East. With the prospect for a ceasefire in the region, there is even more reason to focus on providing temporary support for displaced persons in the region. End quote. Keep at 'em, Senator. And you too, Anne. Thanks for all you're doing here. And listeners, let your representatives know how you feel about this. That especially applies if your representative is one of the weasel Republicans who will happily go along with Obama's scheme of demographic transformation, however much it costs.
April 2017, 3 months into the Trump administration. Jeff Sessions is Attorney General. One of the biggest black marks against Donald Trump as president was his low, spiteful, vindictive treatment of Jeff Sessions. Jeff took it all like the true American gentleman he is. But the contrast between his demeanour and Trump's only makes Trump look worse. As a reminder of what the nation lost, here was Jeff before Trump turned on him.
But we still have Jeff Sessions. I'm starting to worry a bit that Radio Derb will succumb to a formula. First, you'll get a depressed, angry segment or two on something stupid, crazy, or just wrong that President Trump has done. Then you'll get an upbeat segment on Attorney General Sessions' ongoing efforts to drain the Justice Department's swamp and see that the people's laws are firmly but fairly enforced. I shall try to avoid being that formulaic, I promise. AG Sessions has certainly been cheering me up, though. Tuesday this week, Sessions was down at the southern border to see the state of affairs there for himself. He made a good, stirring speech, promising to hire new immigration judges and to firm up immigration enforcement procedures in U.S. attorney offices nationwide. He spoke angrily about the drug traffickers and other criminals who've been taking advantage of our lackadaisical law enforcement, and he promised a new era of serious border protection. That drove progressives nuts. The New York Times, plaything of Mexican billionaire Carlos Slim, published a honking editorial on Sessions' visit. Sample quote: Mr. Sessions and the administration are being led by their bleak vision to the dark side of the law. The pieces are falling into place for the indiscriminate deportation force that the president promised. End quote. Mr. Slim and his elves at the New York Times apparently don't know that the U.S. already has a deportation force and has had one since the U.S. Border Patrol was founded in 1924. It's called, the U.S. Border Patrol. Sessions made his speech at the border town of Nogales, Arizona. Congress critter Raul Grijalva, who represents Nogales and its county, put out a news release ahead of Sessions' visit, saying, inter alia, or perhaps that should be entre otras, quote, the question is not whether or not the administration's policies meet the needs of our borderlands, but rather, will they even bother to learn what those needs actually are? So far, the answer has been a resounding no. End quote. Representative Grijalva is a Hispanic supremacist, a former stalwart of the irredentist and anti-white Raza Unida party. Raza Unida means United Race. With an F minus grade on immigration from Numbers USA. That he represents Nogales is not at all surprising. The US Census Bureau listed Nogales as 95% Hispanic or Latino in the 2010 census. As it happens, I was in Nogales 9 years ago this week. My strongest impression of the place was of fatness. It may very well be the fat capital of America. Concerning what Representative Grijalva is pleased to call the needs of our borderlands, to judge by Nogales, the foremost need is some education in healthy eating. That aside, Nogales is hardly in the USA at all. You don't see anybody, white or black, and nobody speaks English. It was heartening to hear Sessions sicking US attorneys nationwide on the problem of illegals. I live in Suffolk County, New York, several hundred miles from the southern border. The big story in my county this week was the discovery, in a pleasant little town park 15 miles from my front door, of the decomposing corpses of four young men, ages 16 to 20, who were murdered and then dumped there sometime in the last few days. Our county police commissioner told us that, quote, they all suffered from significant trauma throughout their body, end quote. That's a cop's way of saying they were tortured to death. These are killings by the Salvadoran gang MS-13, which is rampant in the area. Last September, in a different park close by, two 16-year-old girls were found dead, likewise tortured. 10 Salvadorans have been arrested and charged with those killings. All are illegal aliens. One of them was deported in 2010, but sneaked back into the country 4 years later. Waiting at my town railroad station Tuesday afternoon for a train into Manhattan to hear Hans von Spakovsky speak, I was on the platform there waiting with 40 or 50 other travellers, most of them Central Americans, chatting in Spanish. On a statistical basis, it's not unlikely there were MS-13 gangbangers among them. We others, we handful of gringos, hung around in the background exchanging looks that said, pretty plainly, what the hell happened to my country? This was on Long Island, in a county named for an English county, where the towns have old English or Dutch names, 1,200 miles from the southern border. Enough of this. It has to stop. That's why we elected you, Mr. President. Let the Syrians, the Russians, and the Koreans go to hell by any route they choose. This needs fixing. Fix it. Or we'll start looking for someone that will.
One reliable constant in immigration policy this past 20 years has been the spinelessness and treachery of the Republican Party congressional establishment. In this clip, we were in the last few months of Republican control of Congress under a Republican president. Was there still time to get things done that needed doing on immigration? A border wall? Universal compulsory e-verify? Tax remittances? Challenge birthright citizenship? Cut chain migration? Possibly. Did the congressional GOP intend to do any of it? Of course not. This week demonstrated once again, as if it needed demonstrating, that there are two major political parties in the USA. The party of open borders on behalf of big money business donors, and the party of open borders on behalf of cultural Marxists, anti-white ethnic lobbies, and public sector employee lobbies. What, you don't think open borders is a good idea? Well, shame on you, you racist. But hey, by all means, enjoy having your weird, cranky opinion in the privacy of your chambers. Just don't expect to have any political representation in the nation's legislature. Those thoughts were, of course, inspired by this Wednesday's vote by the House of Representatives Appropriations Committee. The purpose of the vote was to approve a budget for the Department of Homeland Security to cover DHS operations through the coming fiscal year, which starts on October 1st. Fair enough. DHS operations have to be funded, and the House is the place to authorise the funding, which they did, $51.4 billion for the coming fiscal year. The problem is with some of the amendments that got tacked on to this budget bill. You'll recall that a few weeks ago, Attorney General Jeff Sessions tightened the rules on granting asylum. Obama had loosened them so that any foreigner showing up with a sob story about an abusive husband or gang violence in the neighborhood back home could go into asylum proceedings with permission to stay and work in the USA until the proceedings, which are backed up for years, take place. "No," says Jeff. "Asylum can be claimed only if you have a well-founded fear of persecution at home because of your race, religion, nationality, political opinion, or membership in a particular social group." That's still too broad, in my opinion. What counts as a particular social group? Bird watchers? Skateboarders? Mixed martial artists? Alcoholics? It's way better than what went before, though. Not to the Congress weasels on the Appropriations Committee. One of them, Representative David Price of North Carolina, may his name live in infamy, proposed an amendment to reset grounds for asylum back to the Obama standard. Congress rat Price is a Democrat, so while this is deplorable, it's what you'd expect. What's far worse is that the Price amendment passed the committee on a voice vote with the approval of the committee chairman, Rodney Frelinghuysen of New Jersey, and the chairman of the Homeland Security Subcommittee, Kevin Yoder of Kansas, who are both Republicans. Yoder actually spoke in favour of the Price Amendment. Since it was a voice vote, we don't have a precise tally of what committee members thought about the Price Amendment, which of course basically throws open our borders to anyone who's been coached with a sob story. We do know, however, that only one of the committee's 30 Republican members spoke out against it. Representative John Carter of Texas. Blessings on you, Congressman. Shame on your GOP colleagues. Not content with sabotaging the administration's efforts to tighten up border control, Congress reptiles Frelinghuysen and Yoder allowed three other amendments, each one opening our borders wider. All three passed on voice votes. One of them, proposed by Yoder himself, expanded chain migration and employment-based settlement. The other two, both proposed by Republicans, expanded the H-2 programs for low-skilled workers. Way to go, Republicans! That's what the country voted for in 2016. More low-skilled workers, more chain migration, and asylum for anyone that got yelled at in the street in Tegucigalpa. Speaking of gutless, spineless congressional rhino cuckweasels sabotaging our president, Paul Ryan crawled out of his burrow the other day to denounce what he called identity politics. Sample quote: "That is not conservatism. That is racism. That is nationalism. That is not what we believe in. That is not the founding vision. That is not the founder's creed. That is not natural rights. That is not natural law." End quote. Just one more time, listeners, if you'll please excuse me. I know you've heard this before, but it can never be quoted too often. So, one more time. Quote, in multiracial societies, you don't vote in accordance with your economic interests and social interests. You vote in accordance with race and religion. End quote. That was, of course, the late Lee Kuan Yew, speaking in 2005. As VDare.com's own Twittermeister has noted, congressional Republicans aren't much interested in doing politics. They shuffle around for a few years doing the bidding of donors, then quit and go to work as consultants to those donors on fat contracts. Paul Ryan might, of course, prove me wrong when he leaves Congress in January, but that's not the way to bet. Did Paul Ryan prove me wrong? Check his Wikipedia entry. It's March 2019. In the presidential campaign 3 years earlier, Donald Trump had spoken out strongly against the guest worker scam. Companies like Disney replacing middle-class Americans with cheaper foreign hires. The Americans sometimes, under threat of losing their severance packages, being forced to train their replacements. Now, here he was in March 2019, just over 2 years into his administration, totally reversing his position. Yes, the president hammered another nail into the coffin lid of my hopes this week. This was at a White House bash on Wednesday, the inaugural meeting for something called the American Workforce Policy Advisory Board. That's a Commerce Department boondoggle to improve the quality of our workforce. If the phrase learn to code is slinking into your mind as you hear this, you're not far wrong. Trump's Commerce Secretary, old Wall Street veteran Wilbur Ross, was of course present, though he didn't have a lot to say other than some boilerplate about how American workers form the backbone of our economy. Also at the meeting, sitting at Trump's left hand, in fact, was his daughter Ivanka. Uh-oh. Yes, the first Shiksa is a big player in this training, education, apprenticeships, work-based learning opportunities in the rapidly changing digital economy zone. There were a couple of state governors there too, some CEOs, think tankers, Chamber of Commerce types, principals from organizations in the jobs and training area, and so on. It was all very worthy in its own way, I guess, though, of course, all tilted towards the demands of libertarian billionaires and globalist financiers. That tilt was successfully hidden under a blanket of bland, sleep-inducing waffle about initiatives, pathways, collaborations, challenges. Until the very end, when some reporter asked Trump a question. That was when the president jumped out from under the waffle blanket and said the thing that sent me heading to the liquor cabinet. Actual exchange.
So, President, how much more immigration would you like to see in this tight
labor? Well, we're going to have a lot of people coming into the country. We want a lot of people coming in.
I'm sorry, the sound quality wasn't very good there. The reporter asked Mr. President, how much more immigration would you like to see? And Trump answered, we're going to have a lot of people coming into the country. We want a lot of people coming in, and we need it. Well, so much for the American worker forming the backbone of our economy. Although Trump's declaration was, of course, great news for the Bangladeshi worker. There's no real cause for surprise here. This was, according to the Breitbart reporter, this was the fourth time in a month that Trump has boasted of his intention massively to increase legal immigration levels. He did it just last weekend at CPAC. This is a complete repudiation of Trump's position, not only on the campaign trail, when you might make the excuse that a campaigning politician is not under oath, but months into his presidency, down to at least August 2017, when Trump supported the RAISE Act to halve legal immigration. The RAISE Act was, of course, stomped to death by the Republican leadership in Congress. It was also an exceptionally wrong time for a US president to tell the world, we want a lot of people coming in. At our southern border, illegals, oh, I beg their pardon, asylum seekers are pouring in record numbers, so much so that even the New York Times is running front page stories about it. Quote from the Times, March 5th, more than 76,000 migrants crossed the border without authorization in February, an 11-year high. End quote. For the president to say a dumb thing in public is bad enough. For him to say it at such a time is double dumb. You may say, yes, but legal and illegal immigration are two totally separate issues. You can favour legal while deploring illegal. Well, yes, you can. If Trump is such a big fan of legal immigration, though, how come he didn't reveal that to us until his State of the Union speech the other week? Indeed, not only did he not reveal it, he campaigned open and loud as a candidate keen to reduce legal immigration. And he continued talking that way for months into his presidency. And while the legal-illegal distinction might be as clear as day to you and me, it may be considerably less clear to an illiterate 75 IQ Guatemalan swineherd who only hears, we want a lot of people coming in. Or the equivalent thing in Mayan. I'm sorry once again to upset the ever-Trumpers, but in rigorous logic, there are only four possible deductions one can make from this latest fiasco. One, Trump is a cynical liar. Or two, Trump is too inattentive and mentally lazy to stay on script. Or three, Trump is a man of only feeble resolution, whose intentions can be rotated through 180 degrees by whispers in his ear from clever manipulators. Or, four, Trump is losing his marbles and no longer knows or cares what he's saying. In support of the fourth possibility there, Trump had a senior moment at the Wednesday meeting. Ivanka was, as I said, sitting at his left hand. Sitting at the president's right hand, to make sure his other ear was covered, was Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple. At one point, the president thanked Tim Cook for participating in this advisory board, except that he referred to him as Tim Apple. The press jumped all over that, of course. On this point, though, at least the president has my sympathies. He has a lot of names to remember, and it doesn't get easier after 70. I discussed that with my boss, Peter Vidare, and he agreed. That is it for this defrosted Radio Derb. I hope those few short blasts from the past stirred you to reflection. Thank you for listening. There will be opinionating on current news, as usual, from a farm fresh Radio Derb next week.